I'm Selena Flores.
And I'm Mike Crenshaw. We're your hosts for this episode of It Did Happen Here. Episode 3 is the story of the Coalition for Human Dignity, or CHD.
The CHD did have a lot of contact with a lot of different groups. I was a staff person of the CHD. I was also a member of ACT UP in Portland. I had a very strong relationship with leadership at the Lesbian Community Project and in a variety of other places in the city. My connections became the organization's connections, and the organizational leadership at the board level also brought many relationships to the organization.
Check out the It Did Happen Here podcast at itdidhappenherepodcast.com. You can also go to kboo.fm and search It Did Happen Here.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Hi, greetings and welcome to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO in Portland. I'm your host, Adam Carpinelli. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. We're here with folks with Oregonians Against Slavery and Involuntary Servitude. How y'all doing?
Great.
Doing well. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Great. Thanks so much for being on. Very interested in hearing about the project and what it entails, but would love to hear from y'all first, just introductions and or how you got involved.
I can go ahead and get started. This is Yakira. I'm the director of communications. And actually, the three of us on the call today all went to college together. And my personal involvement in criminal justice reform started with an introduction to a restorative justice class. And I ultimately did some research in reentry, and then, you know, kind of stayed involved. And this spring and summer, we all got together and created this organization where we're working on changing the language of the Oregon Constitution. I'll go ahead and pass it on to Jordan next.
Yeah, so as Yakira mentioned, we all went to college together. And during my time at college, I actually interned at the Oregon State Capitol. And during my time there, I kind of stumbled upon the slavery exception clause in the Oregon State Constitution, which is not particular to Oregon, but is in a lot of state constitutions as well as the United States Constitution. And because of this, I advocated for a proposed amendment to the Oregon State Constitution, looking to remove the language of slavery. It didn't happen in the 2019 session, but that's one of the reasons that I've gotten involved with this organization. I also had experience with restorative justice during my time here, and that kind of led me to joining up with Yakira, Riley, and some others to kind of further this goal.
Hello, my name is Riley, and I first got introduced to reformative criminal justice and aspects of it in an internship with the Tribal Defense Clinic at the University of Washington Law School. And after working in that clinic for about 2 years, I joined up with the same class, reforming criminal justice class that Yakira was in. And I worked on specifically Oregon wage issues. And I wrote my economics thesis on federal prison wage issues. And it was a perfect transfer into working with Oregonians Against Slavery and Involuntary Servitude.
Great. Well, we want to hear more about the organization, but probably it might be good to give a little context on the clause itself. And Jordan, you mentioned that it's not completely uncommon in other states too. So can you explain what the heck's going on with that and why that would even still be on paper in any state in the U.S.?
Yeah, absolutely. So when slavery was technically abolished by the United States Constitution, there is an exception clause which reads in different language throughout different states, but essentially that slavery will be abolished except for in the case of punishment, which constitutes jail or prison. And so this allows for what we consider and what is broadly considered to be slavery within prison. So this language is in a multitude of constitutions, including Oregon's. It's really common. It's been truly abolished in only one state so far, in Colorado, where they have formally removed the language of slavery from their constitution entirely. So their constitution now reads to some effect, that slavery will no longer be allowed, full stop, with no exception clause included. And that's kind of what we're heading towards for Oregon.
That's great. And so fast forward here to the 21st century and in our COVID-19 2020 times. And after all this time, it took a couple of y'all to, you know, decide to work on this effort. I mean, where have the efforts been even before this? Or is it just something that really has been this overlooked in Oregon?
Well, I think part of it comes from like how monumental and ingrained the issue is. It comes from even from the first day, right when the Oregon State Constitution was ratified. It was, we're going to either choose between having slavery in the state or choosing to have slavery in prison. And we chose to not have slavery in the state, but have slavery in prisons. And because of that, it's just been this ongoing issue of how can you really change the Constitution? It's a monumental effort to try and go up against a state or federal constitution. And it's then, because there's been so many other issues and so many other things to focus on and so many other steps to move towards, it seems like it's been largely overlooked. Not to say that there have been several efforts in the past to change it. They just have not had the same type of support.
Sure. Well, at the same time, we look at the state of Oregon as another example where they legalized marijuana and then fairly recently some other substances. And of course, there are positive ramifications of that, right, for formerly incarcerated persons or potentially incarcerated persons with those kind of, you know, pieces there. So in a sense, it seems like, I mean, this would be another one that should have been on the table, right?
Yeah, it definitely should have been. And I think this is the biggest issue here is that people just aren't aware that this language is in the Constitution, because it seems so absurd that slavery would still exist anywhere in the US. So I think a big part of what we're trying to do here is have an educational campaign, because I think we can all decide, you know, it's 2020, it's the right thing to do to not enslave people. I don't think that's a very controversial thing to say. I think it's just that people aren't aware. So we really want to bring this, you know, to the more of the forefront of the conversation and really start talking about, you know, humanizing people who are incarcerated and making it so that they have rights, you know?
Right. Well, we want to get that consciousness out there. So I think this is the time to talk about it. And people should know more about probably how to plug in to your efforts as well or get involved with this kind of work anywhere, including the states, like you said, that, you know, still have plenty of ways to go with Oregon too. So can you talk about what the work is kind of entailing as far as putting all this together? I would assume there's quite a bit of research. Sounds like you've done a lot of, you know, really cursory research on kind of the history of slavery and how that relates to Oregon.
Yeah, we definitely have. A lot of our efforts have been in research. We are also trying to introduce an amendment into the state legislature this session. So that's been one of our big goals recently is reaching out to different state representatives and senators who are working with us to introduce a proposed amendment, which would be voted on by the legislature this coming summer. And then if passed, go on to the ballot at the next general election for Oregon state to potentially pass. So it's been our big one.
And can you talk about the different kind of strategies involved in doing the outreach? Because like you were talking about how people really don't understand, you know, all over the country, how severe, how intense, how embedded the history of slavery is, maybe with some more of the kind of BLM activism that's been happening, you know, maybe some people are more receptive to understanding this, but still not knowing it. So how do we get the word out?
Yeah, Adam. So I think you really hit the nail on the head with the kind of rise of the BLM movement this summer to become very mainstream across the US. This is a great time to get this message out. I think it's, you know, there are a few ways. Right now we're starting this effort to, you know, join more talk shows and present to college classes, present to community centers, present to community leaders, get people to call their representatives and say, hey, you know, there's this proposal coming up in the session. I am in support of abolishing slavery. I think you should vote yes on this proposal. And then, you know, for the everyday person, it really comes down to just having that conversation when you're out with friends or Zooming with friends, I guess, in the context of COVID. Talk about it, you know, say, did you know that slavery is legal in the Oregon Constitution and just make that conversation common and start educating folks. And, you know, that message can spread through friend and family connections.
And then where do you think the work also continues from even changing the language? Because obviously there's a culture there that's, you know, that it's been instilled upon, right? Over, you know, hundreds of years, maybe a little bit less in the case of like Oregon State for kind of the transatlantic world and the whole slavery experience in the Americas. But what does it say about the prison industrial complex even today? Because even once this is able to happen, then, right, we have to go for kind of all the other milestones, if you will, I guess.
Yeah, so that's a really good question. Our feeling is that we have to walk before we can run. So our focus is really about changing the language of the Constitution. We think that, you know, language is a powerful thing. It's the same reason that in our organization, we don't say prisoners or inmates. We call people incarcerated people because they are first and foremost people. And so removing that language of slavery is about really humanizing and normalizing people who are in prisons and jails, because when they're legally allowed to be kept as slaves, that's just, you know, that's not, you're being treated as property, not a person. So our big focus right now is really on the language, because we need to take that first step.
So as far as process with your work, you know, there's in-reach and then there's outreach on both sides. So are you able to do some in-reach, even though there is some very mitigating pandemic circumstances these days? But yeah, is that possible still? Or
yeah, we're definitely working on both in and outreach. We are in coordination with a group inside of Oregon State Penitentiary, Uhuru Sasa, who has been working with us to some degree to kind of help us further this goal. We're also reaching out to, as Yukira mentioned, different organizations, different classes, different groups around in Salem and other places in Oregon that are working on other either prison rights or other social justice movements, and trying to kind of spread our message a little bit more broadly.
Great. What are some other strategies for people, whether they're in Oregon or even other states, you think, to kind of address this particular issue or get involved, get plugged in?
Yeah, again, I'm going to kind of echo what Yukira said a little earlier. A lot of this is about education. This is something that many, many people don't know exists, don't know it's a problem. The way that we deal with prison in this country is really to put it to the side, not focus on it. It's a kind of a done deal. And I think that that's what we're trying to really pull into question and get people to have these conversations that make you question, you know, how are we dehumanizing these people by considering them in our constitutions and what we consider the, you know, highest law of the land to be slaves. So a lot of this is focused on kind of having these conversations, getting the message out, and then of course making this big legislative push to really show that Oregon, as well as other states, hopefully will follow, but specifically how Oregonians don't agree with the language of what our Oregon state constitution says. So trying to align Oregon's values with a...
And I want to add on really quick to Jordan's point. Another thing too is like the people that you talk to your friends on both sides of the aisle. This is a nonpartisan issue, because when it comes down to it, you know, slavery is antithetical to liberty, which is, you know, we have in the US constitution, we talk about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. This isn't a partisan issue, which is a beautiful thing in this divided climate that we live in. Slavery is just wrong, no matter where you sit. And I think that's a really cool conversation to be able to have with anyone, no matter where they are on the political spectrum.
And just echoing what both my associates said, definitely make noise and point it towards the legislatures. As we go through the motions of trying to get this onto the ballot, we first have to have it passed in the House and the Senate. And making sure that people know that this is a issue that Oregonians care about. And then once we successfully get it to the ballot, making sure that people are willing to volunteer and call and really make sure that their voices are heard and make sure that the country and the state knows that slavery is unacceptable.
For folks tuning in, you're listening to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. And we're here with folks with OASIS, Oregonians against slavery and involuntary servitude. Can you talk a little bit more about, so we're using the language slavery, involuntary servitude, and what that means inside prisons today. And I think, again, you know, you're talking about how we have to talk to both sides of the spectrum. And of course, one, there's a very particular side that will always, you know, run the gambit of the more cliche reactions to our ideas around this, right? Which is, you know, people belong inside, you know, people are, you know, have some kind of luxury inside or whatever. And that people probably generally don't even realize how much people work inside actually, and how much they make, or rather we should say don't make. So can you talk a little bit more about that before we kind of close up and talk more about how people can plug into your project?
And yes, there's definitely a very pervasive idea that people deserve to be punished, or this is something that just is the reality of being punished in this country, is that you have rights stripped away and that you are made less than human in certain ways. And in Oregon, there's actually 40-hour work weeks for all incarcerated people. But when we look at slavery itself, it is mandatory or forced to labor without pay. And we find that actually a lot of guys on the inside, when we talk to them, do want to work. They do want to like have something to do and have something that they can contribute to, but they don't want to be slaves, as would be normal and obvious. And moving from there, we can then focus on like how do we take the first step towards declassifying and creating a better system for them.
Yeah, I would think of it really just, you know, it's humanization and normalization. I think that that's what's really important here is, you know, changing this language. We've, you know, obviously recognized that language is incredibly important. It has a lot of power behind it. This symbolism that we are still considering these people in prison as slaves is really, really horrible. And I think, again, as Akira said, this is, you know, a nonpartisan issue. It's a bipartisan issue. We can all kind of agree on this. And, you know, we're really just trying to focus on how best to make sure that we are humanizing the people that are incarcerated and recognizing that they are people first and incarcerated second, and normalizing this conversation that they are people, that they deserve to be treated with the respect and care that we would treat anyone outside of prison as well.
Yeah, and then one last thing to add on to Jordan's point, kind of going back to what you were saying, Adam, about, you know, that refrain of like people deserve to be punished. Being in prison is already a punishment. You're separated from your community. You're separated from your family. It's not all sunshine and roses in prison. We don't need to have slavery too.
So folks, it looks like there's a website, there's a Facebook, maybe some other ways people can plug in. So first off, people can look up Oregonians Against Slavery and Involuntary Servitude on Facebook, and that page should come up. Then what's the link for your website?
Our website is oasisprisoncoalition.org.
Okay. And is that a way that people can plug into, you know, the work that you do or the campaign, or?
Yeah, we'll have a lot of updates on there, a lot of educational materials, a little bit about our team and ways that people can plug into our campaign and take action.
Uh-huh. So it sounds like one of the major forms of the work that you're doing is this political education.
Definitely.
Yeah. One quick last question. I mean, was there a body of literature kind of already kind of existing around this, or is this something that y'all really had to get into looking at primary materials? I know that's kind of a nerdy question, but I mean, it sounds like you did have to get into some kind of deep history there to kind of find the root of this stuff.
Yeah, there's definitely been a lot of research that's gone into this issue. I think all three of us have done different research projects into this, both in our schoolwork at university and also within OASIS for the organization. And it's been a huge part of us learning about well, the issue and kind of the more unknown details about what goes on kind of behind the scenes, if you will, as well as you know, gaining this information so that we can, you know, give this knowledge to others and share this knowledge with our friends, our family, and frankly, strangers. Are trying to obviously kind of spread our outreach, and we're reachable on Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter, all at Oasis. And so we definitely are trying to kind of draw more people in, get them to know about this issue, and make it known that it is an issue.
That's great. Well, as far as doing that historical work and it being difficult, I mean, what would be some resources for people? I mean, I guess if they're in Oregon, they can, you know, was it things that you were able to locate with like Oregon Historical Society, or were there things you had to dig up from kind of old writings? Or
there's definitely a huge section of cursory research just on any normal Google search. If you search Oregon slavery history or Oregon prison slavery history, you'll get hundreds, if not thousands, of hits. Where a lot of my research came from specifically was a little bit harder to find because it's hidden behind those paywalls of general subscriptions and research services and research libraries. But there is just massive amounts of free information on the web about what's in the Oregon State Constitution and analysis of that constitution, mm-hmm. and how that plays out on things like Prison Policy Initiative or other programs like that.
I would just echo that and say Oregon has a pretty ugly history, and I think that it's not uncommon. I think it's pretty common throughout the states, but I think that for how liberal Oregon is on a national scene, we tend to forget that we have a lot of this history, and so that information is definitely there and accessible because there's a lot of it, and it's important to recognize that this history impacts our present really heavily.
Mm-hmm. And were there any states that kind of mirrored Oregon, or do a lot of other states just look the same way as far as the history of like just having it just, you know, being this mention basically, I guess, in state constitutions? Is it that common? Or
yeah, it's very common. So it's in the United States Constitution, and many states mirror their constitutions off of the U.S. Constitution. So many, many states have this language. It's definitely not only Oregon.
Right. Okay. Well, again, for people to get back in touch with y'all, it's OASIS, Oregonians Against Slavery and Involuntary Servitude. And can you repeat the website for us again?
Yeah, so our website is oasisprisoncoalition.org.
Awesome. Closing out, any other resources or links people should be checking out on this topic and or your efforts?
Yeah, you can find us on Facebook, on Twitter, and on Instagram. You can email us. You can reach us at our website. Definitely looking to get more people engaged in this issue, so please feel free to reach out.
Awesome, great.
And also remember to call your representatives and tell them that you're against slavery.
Right on. Thanks, y'all. You've been listening to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Big thanks to our guests, our engineers, and free them all.
Hi, everyone. I'm Karen James from Prison Pipeline. On December 21st, we'll broadcast your holiday messages to and from your loved ones in prison. Write your holiday message or record your voice using Zoom and email your message to kbooppc@gmail.com. Then tune in to Prison Pipeline on December 21st to hear your holiday messages to your loved one. Again, send those written or recorded messages to kbooppc@gmail.com. And from all of us at Prison Pipeline, stay safe, be well, and all the best during this holiday season.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.